Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first this morning, legendary DJ Dave Fanning has interviewed them all. Paul McCartney, David Bowie, Sinead O'Connor, Shane McGowan, Bruce Springsteen, Beyonce, Kylie. And of course, he has interviewed you two many, many times. He was on 2FM for years, where he introduced many of us to new bands, especially new Irish bands. And now he has two shows on RT Gold, midweek and Saturday evenings. And his TV show, Fanning at Whelan's, is coming back for a new season. Dave Fanning, great to have you here. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much indeed, Miriam. It's a pleasure to be here.
And my pleasure to have you here. Listen, before we get into some of your many, many work highlights, remind me about your family, where you grew up and where you come in the family.
Well, I always say I come number six, but my mother always corrects me and says, no, you're number seven, because there was a brother that I never met who died after about 6 months or something.
That's so sad.
Yeah, that was obviously years ago, well before me. So being the last one.
What was his name?
Brian. So being the last one, I come number six in the family. There's five boys, one girl, Mount Merion, literally like a mile from here. It's where I grew up, a place called Foster Avenue. And I went to Mount Merion National School, Kilmacud National School, Blackrock College, University College across the road, and RTE, all within a mile of my house.
You're all pretty high achievers in your family. A lot of them, like your brother, a poet.
Yeah.
Brother John,
yeah.
Big in advertising. Was there a lot of emphasis on education when you were growing?
Yes, my mother. She was a teacher as well.
Ah.
Yeah, big time. Huge. Education was the whole thing, you know. So I was the black sheep of the family, I can tell you. But yeah.
You're not, now maybe this is prejudice, you're not a typical Black Rock boy, or are you?
Well, I mean, like, I played rugby for about 5 minutes, if that's what you mean. No, not really. And I even go to some rugby matches, but I much prefer soccer or football, whatever you want to call it. I've no idea, am I not? Well, I think my other three brothers went to the Christian Brothers in Oatlands, and my mother was pretty savvy and said, right, I've had enough of those guys. So down the road to a different school, that's all it was. It was just a different school. I never thought of it as being the way some people seem to think of Blackrock College as being up or something or other. It was just there.
And when you left school, describe Dublin, what it was like, and what were the prospects for a young guy like you leaving school? What did you do?
Yeah, I never thought of prospects, really. I never thought, like, I mean, everything is relative. Like, if this is all you know, this is all you know, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I went to UCD, I did English and philosophy, and then did a higher diploma in education, got all that, and did a bit of teaching in Walkinstown, as I say. Saw an ad in the paper for, you know, editor wanted for Scene magazine, which I used to buy, and I said, I've got to go for this. And that's how it all started. We did an item on pirate radio, and then we went on pirate radio to sell the magazine, and then 2FM started just afterwards. So timing is everything.
Did you enjoy being a teacher?
Yeah, like when you say it like that, it sounds like, you know, like my years behind on the chalk on the blackboard. No, I mean, I was only doing it for a year, you know. I was basically only doing like 350 hours for the HD. But that's all it was, yeah. Yeah, it was good laugh. I mean, I was teaching 12-year-olds. And I tried in poetry because my brother has 6 books of poetry out, and I thought, okay, I can do this too. I thought, like, I'll do Dylan on a Friday. Doesn't work. You know, Dylan's not page poetry. If you haven't got the music, don't bother, you know.
Because I assume from your teenage years, you were always obsessed with music. And I suppose one of the things is how cool it is. You're a DJ. Lots of us depended on you to tell us what was cool. But how did you decide what was cool? And was it from a young age, a very young age?
First of all, you say teenager. I was a veteran by my teens. Because, like, I was in the Beatles fan club from about the age of 6 or 5. The minute I was there, right from the start of the Beatles. Like, I'd known Cliff and Elvis when I was nothing. You know, and then when the Beatles came along, just at the right age, about 5, and don't forget, I had the influence of my brothers. Like, we had box sets at home of Woody Guthrie, let alone Bob Dylan later on, you know, that kind of thing. And then my oldest brother, John, who you know well,
yeah.
I think, like, he was into Thelonious Monk and kind of Blossom Dearie and the jazz stuff and all that. But it was basically the next brother, Peter, who was a teacher in Vancouver for years. He is the one who had stuff like, you know, we always got the first Joni Mitchell album or the first Leonard Cohen album or the first Bob Dylan album. So I knew all of those. Even though when the queue up for the record player, when it was my turn, that's not what I was playing. The brother just above me was all the Incredible String Band, a lot of the folk music. He was in the Peabody Eilean, Gerard, the poet, played the Eilean pipes and all that. God, he was terrible. But it was music all over the place, yeah. And like, I was just interested in the music of the day, be it pop music, and as pop kind of, I suppose, morphed into rock, I was with it all the way.
Was your big break getting into 2FM? And if it was, how did you get into 2FM?
Yeah, I was in Pirates. I was in Radio Dublin when nobody ever heard it. We were only in Radio Dublin just to promote the rock magazine that I mentioned.
Yes.
And then we just, you know, it just morphed into sort of more radio was kept going on. And then just at the right time, right place, 2FM came along. I think RT were thinking of doing a pop music station in the 80s, but they realised all this pirate stuff was getting in the way. We better do it now. So every single pirate applied. And I just happened to get the job at midnight, which at the time, by the way, wasn't as late as it is now, because people go to bed a lot earlier now. Like, traffic jams only started in the morning at 8 o'clock. Now they start at 6:30. So, like, you know, like the students were all up, you know, doing things they shouldn't have been doing.
Did you love that time? And obviously you made great friendships. First of all, you're still very friendly with Ian Dempsey, I know. And of course, you were incredibly close to the late, great Gerry Ryan.
Yeah, we had fun in the 1980s, I can tell you. Gerry once has often said, like, from about 82 to 88, before he started doing the morning thing, that the only time he ever felt he was really in Led Zeppelin was those nights. Because they were crazy, like a lot of fun, let's say. And it was brilliant, yeah. And like, I mean, at one stage we were doing our house, trying to get it fixed up and all that. We had to live with Gerry in his house for about 6 months out in Clontarf. And there was two of our kids, three of his kids, and it was insane. It was brilliant, though. It was great. And we went off all over the place. We went to holidays to Greece and stuff like that. And Pink Floyd are playing in London kind of thing. Let's go for 3 nights. That kind of nonsense, you know.
Yeah, but lovely times.
Oh,
great memories.
We were just so lucky. I mean, right time, right place. If this is the gig you want, then I got it at the best time.
And also, as if music wasn't enough, you presented the movie show as well for years. Yeah. Was film always fascinating to you as well as music?
Again, the brothers. 100%. Wow. Go to Stella Cinema in Mount Merion. The day they knocked that down and turned it into a furniture shop.
Cinema, yeah.
My God almighty, I was protesting outside. Hated it. Down with this sort of thing. But and the Ormond in Stillorgan as well.
Yeah.
So you go to every single movie at least once, twice a week, all the time. Everything was movies. And again, that was the older brothers. Peter, again, the older brother in particular, was really into movies. And Jared. In fact, Jared has his name on a seat. I noticed somebody told me the other day in the IFI, like, you lift up your seat, you go, like, sponsored by Jared Fanning kind of thing or something,
yeah,
or whatever, dedicated to Jared
Fanning. He was the great poet, of course.
Well, I mean, yeah, he had his six, he just brought out the full, well, I mean, he's dead now. He died a couple of years ago. Mm. Well, what am I saying? About 5 or 6 years ago. And he, the collected works came out there, but last year it was a good big presentation for it. It was brilliant, you know.
Yeah, he's a beautiful poet. Now, you're married to the great Ursula.
I am.
Who in herself is an incredibly able and talented woman.
She is.
Where did you meet? And tell me about her.
We met in Dalkey direction because she was staying in an apartment there and I was kind of staying in one too around the same time, etc. And it just kind of went from there, really. And I think I had met her in town in a pub, it seems, before that, but I don't really... Oh, I shouldn't say that. I should have been. Should have been. My God! No, yeah. That's something like that, yeah. Yeah.
And your children, some of them are involved in the business, is this correct?
Well, funny enough, they're not, or they shouldn't
be.
God. But I mean, no, hold on. The thing is, they actually are now, because the programme Fanning at Whelan's on the television. My son Jack is the producer of it.
Okay, great.
My daughter Hayley brings the guests in and brings them up to makeup and makes them sign contracts and stuff. And Ursula does the legals, and I do all the presentation and the writing and getting the bands with Ian Wilson and Jack as well. So, what did Sly say? Sly and the family. It's a family affair.
Great. And look, any of us who ever worked in radio remember your working partnership with producer Ian Wilson.
Yeah.
He's a fabulous producer.
Yeah, he's doing Fanny Williams too, taking the bands.
And I know you're still collaborators. Explain to me, I know he's working with you on this, what Ian Wilson and Dave Fanning achieved together. Because you did achieve a lot together as a duo.
Yeah, but we don't deserve any praise for anything really, except
you
maybe...
You do.
No, I'll tell you, the only praise that anybody deserves is Ian for bringing bands in. Like, I mean, there's a studio across the corridor here, Studio 8, and Ian went... Like, I mean, I would have done it too, but I was only on contract, so they can kick you out in 2 seconds. But Ian is on his staff, and he knew exactly what he was talking about. He said, John Peel in Britain can do it. You bring in bands, it's really good public service. Within about 3 years, RT realised just how good it was. Like, they don't get any return for it. They have to pay for each session and that, but it's a really good thing to do. It's just public service broadcasting. And we ended up doing about 400 bands over a 10 or 15, 20 year period, you know, which is brilliant, just bringing bands in. So the sessions were everything. Apart from that, we just happened to be right time, right place. We were lucky. It's the gig I wanted. I mean, did I win the lotto in terms of that kind of thing? Yes, 100%. And I'm still am winning the lotto.
You make your own luck as well, part of the time.
Yeah.
And some of your work highlights probably happening in that Studio 8. I know everyone associates you, Dave, with you too. Also with Sinead O'Connor. So let's start with those two. How did you forge, and you did forge, such a close bond with both?
Well, between 77 and 79, I was in Pirates. And I think one of the reasons people say, how did you pick out U2? Well, they were the one band who were making so many demo tapes. I played them more than any other. The first time we did a session here was with U2, because I'd played them more often as a Dublin band or as a smaller band, Irish band, on the radio. And it's not like I thought this band are going to rule the world. When they told me they were going to play a gig in the stadium, I said, ah, jeepers, good luck with that, sonny. In fact, one time I met Bono on Grafton Street and he says, we're going to go to London. I said, oh God, Bono, everybody goes to London and then they're back by Christmas with their tail between their legs. Are you sure it's the right thing to do? And I had no idea just how prepared they were. They weren't going to London at all. They were using London as a stepping stone for America. They had already laid down loads of plans there. They knew exactly what they were doing, and Paul McGuinness at the helm, you can't go wrong, really, because they could look after all the music and everything else. And they were really brilliant, you know, they really were. But like, was I impressed by these demo tapes? Yeah. Were they my favourite? God, no. I mean, the Undertones had an album out at the time which I thought was just fantastic. The Boomtown Rats' first album, fantastic. So like, this was just, you know, I mean, I love U2. I think they're great. I really do. I can't believe the kind of trajectory. Like, who would have, like, I mean, Led Zeppelin were the biggest rock band of the 70s from, say, I don't know, like 70 to 75. They got their 5 years. And U2 got their 5 years between about whatever it is, you know, 80 and 85 or something. But before that, I don't know. Anyway, the point about it is that they then got another five and another five and another five and another five, and they kept being the biggest band in the world. It's bizarre. And they're very nice. That's the funny thing about it is, I think I probably got into them more at the very beginning because I liked them as people, less than the music in some ways, because the music I thought was good. But like, as I say, I prefer the album by the Undertones or Boomtown Rats at the time, you know.
They're just very nice guys. Yeah. Now listen, in addition to you two and of course Sinead, you also bonded really well with people like David Bowie. Tell me first about Sinead.
Sinead, yeah. I did the very first and last interview with Sinead, which is weird. I didn't realise that until somebody pointed it out. She was in here with their very first album, and just before the release of the first album. And she was great. Sinead, she wasn't easy, you know. Like, she changed her mind very quickly. And when the email world came in, the nicest emails would arrive in, and then the next week they weren't necessarily as nice, because I was involved in the last 5 years of making a documentary which never got made in the end, with Larry Bass, and we did an awful lot. We were with her a lot up in her house or her houses, because she had sold one during that time and then moved to another one, etc. And she was troubled. Everybody knows that. There's no question about it. She was, you know, and she was a gentle soul, and I really liked her an awful lot. I really did.
Yeah, a beautiful talent.
Yeah.
Tell me about Bowie. You got to interview him a number of times, didn't you, David
Bowie?
Yeah,
that's because I have a 3-hour documentary coming up on Radio 1 soon, probably in the first week of January, because on the 10th of January, it's the 10th anniversary.
Wow, so on Bowie.
Yeah. Just Bowie, yeah.
Wow.
And I've got 6 interviews that I did with Bowie down through the years.
What was he like?
And my favourite solo artist of the 1970s is David Bowie. I absolutely love him. To be honest, a lot of his output in the 80s, 90s wasn't really that good. It was just okay, you know. Mm. But it was always really interesting to see where he'd take you. And by God, did he take you. But the albums in the 1970s were just astonishing things. Just the different albums, the different kinds of music. And as a person, I remember one time I said to him, what do you call it? He goes, you'll hear it in the documentary. I said something like, you know, you share a birthday with Elvis Presley, not age-wise, but the actual birth date, January the 8th, says, I'd rather you said Jackson Pollock. That's the kind of, like, you know, there are some who'd say he's a kind of a chancer and a dilettante, but he's really into art, he's really into dance, he's really into expression in his way. He could have easily not been a musician.
But in the way you really liked U2 and the people in the band, did you like Bowie?
Oh my God, absolutely. Oh, as a person. Yeah, I see what you mean as opposed to the music. Yeah, yeah, I did, of course. Yeah, he was lovely. He was great, you know. I mean, like, I'm one of the, you know, claim to fame kind of thing. So, I two things. Number one, I was once somebody's phone a friend on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I've got to get the T-shirt.
Did you get the answer right?
No, they never asked me. I've been waiting on the phone the whole time. It never rang. You know? And the other one is that one time I was at home in my mother's house, actually, and David Bowie rang me.
Oh my, that's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? No, but yeah, I mean,
did your mother know it was cool?
Well, she didn't answer the phone. My brother answered the phone and says, okay. The guy here says it's David Bowie. I said, yeah, no, it isn't. I know who it is. And then it turned out it was.
That is seriously cool.
Yeah.
Now, you have interviewed everyone, as I said, including Bowie, McCartney, Jagger, Beyonce, Shane McGowan, Christy Moore, Kylie Minogue. Do you think you get on so well with musicians because they spot, you know, their music and they spot the fan in you?
Two things about that. First of all, I don't know if I do get on that well with them. And secondly, yes, I do know what I'm talking about. But one of the things about knowing what you're talking about is all you got to do is do your homework, even if you don't. Like there's one or two, like I've interviewed loads of, like I interviewed Michael Bolton. Now, do you honestly think I've ever listened to one of his albums? No, of course I haven't. But do a bit of homework and just, you know, be nice to the guy. He's like, yeah, it's fine.
Would you spot people before other people do? Like I remember you telling us about Billie Eilish way before most people knew about her. But I think, was your daughter key to that?
Yeah, it's just, it's a ridiculously insane story. But yes, to the point where, by the way, I rang up Billie's mother there recently and said, Maggie, for crying out loud, I want your man. For crying out loud is the name of his album. I said, I want him on Fanny O'Whelan's. So he's on Fanny O'Whelan's. Phineas, who's like 21 times brother. Grammy nominated. He writes all the stuff with her and produces all the stuff with her. He won 10 or 11 Grammys. And he's there with his full American band on Fanny O'Whelan's in the second programme, which would
be... So the mammy got something. Him for you?
Yeah, in the middle. Yeah. Yeah. They had breakfast in our house there when they were over here at the Three Arena.
I love it. And I remember you once saying, Dave, that you can't remember sometimes people's names, but yet you can remember track lists and albums from donkeys years ago. How is that?
Listen, Mary, I can't remember anybody's name. Yeah, I'm really bad with names, but I think a lot of people will say that, you know. Even now, with all due respect to the wonderful programmes on RT Radio 1, I don't listen very much. What I do is I listen to music. That's all I do.
Yeah,
and like, it's never, ever, ever. People say, don't make your hobby your job. What a stupid thing to say. I mean, I've had it now for 40 plus years. Give me another 20. No problem.
It worked brilliantly. Now, are you an organised person, Dave, or a disorganised person? Like, do you have all those extraordinary interviews carefully archived?
You're asking, somebody must have told you, you must have done your homework.
No, I'll tell you,
my disorganisation is the biggest single problem in my life. It's just, I'm all over the place. I've lost interest. I'll tell you, a perfect example is the David Bowie interview thing, the David Bowie thing coming up. One of the people I did interview about 10 or 12 years ago was Peter Frampton at his house in Cincinnati. And we were there, we filmed it and everything else, and obviously. And it was great, and he was really good. And Peter Frampton was in the same class as David Bowie at school, and his father, these are things you need to know, his father was David Bowie's art teacher. But the thing is, of course I've lost the interview, and I lost a few David Bowie interviews too, but anyway, somebody found them for me, so I'm very, it's terrible. I'm like, I'm completely disorganised.
Now Fanny O'Whelan's is back from next Saturday. Apart from Phineas, who's in the new series?
Oh gosh, I should know this. I should have a little list of all this kind of thing.
Okay, this is your organisational skills.
Yeah, right, okay. So Fanny O'Whelan's, the Water Boys, we have with the album, of a really interesting album they released this year, which is Life, Death and Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper being the counterculture. So I talked to Mike a good bit about that. We've got Divine Comedy. We've got Phineas, as I say.
Yeah.
And we've even got, you know your man, Damian Lewis.
Yeah,
from,
he's fab.
From, you know, the Band of Brothers and Homeland.
He's a great
and
actor.
Billions. Well, he was started out as a musician, so he's bringing out a second album soon, so we have him and his full band as well, and lots of people, like we have Madras Salak and we have Florence Road, the four girls from Bray. They're going to be big. They're touring with The Last Dinner Party all over in the States now for the next 4 months, so that's going to be big.
Bob, and what I still love is it's still really important to you, Dave, to showcase new Irish artists.
Yeah, a lot of that came out of COVID. A lot of that came, like, I mean, I'm going to be honest, like, I mean, a lot of companies said we're going to get behind bands and do this, and fair play to Diageo and Guinness, they're brilliant. They put the money in and they don't ask questions. They let us get on with it. Fair play also to, you know, Whelan's itself and all that kind of thing. And then, you know, the programme is on the telly on Virgin and everybody's behind it and everything's good. And we were only doing it, like, really for COVID in one way. And now 140 acts later, we're in our sixth series, you know.
Listen, Dave Fanning, I've really loved having you on the other side of a mic. I've enjoyed it. Fanning at Whelan's is on Virgin Media TV from the 6th of December. And Dave, you're on RT Gold at 6 p.m. weekdays and Saturdays. And you have those specials. You mentioned one on David Bowie. You've also got one on the Cranberries on Radio 1.
And that's on Christmas Day and Patrick's Day. Oh, Christmas Day and Stephen's Day.
I love it. Listen, Dave, it's been a pleasure interviewing
Miriam,
you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much indeed. It's been a pleasure for me too.
My joy. Stay being enthusiastic.
I will.
I love it.
Absolutely. It's very easy.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Thanks.